we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Today, Thursday, officially marks 1 year to the opening of the Tokyo Olympics. Because of the global pandemic, the Olympic Games are expected to be more subdued than originally planned. Reuters reporter Megan Ravel tells us more.
The Olympic Games are the most complex event on this planet.
A one-year countdown has begun to the 2021 Olympic Games, a more muted affair than the first attempt 12 months ago. On July 24th last year, a glitzy ceremony promised an unforgettable spectacle. Even 6 months ago, organizers were still bullish, determined for a return on their huge financial investment. Just 2 months later, however, plans that had been almost a decade in the making were shredded as a health crisis gripped the world. The unprecedented decision was made to postpone for a year, but the Games are still shrouded in uncertainty.
I think it's quite often misunderstood that athletes, especially Olympic athletes, are some kind of superheroes that are immune to everything. We're not.
We are facing an unprecedented challenge again now because this postponement is the first ever postponement of Olympic Games in Olympic history.
A mountain of questions surround every aspect of hosting the mammoth event. Coordinators say the 2021 Olympics will be simplified, reduced to must-haves. Over 200 measures will be reportedly needed to streamline the event. How much that will cost Japan is anyone's guess. The Games already cost over $12 billion before the postponement. Mounting costs risk alienating taxpayers as the tide of public opinion turns away from the Games. One-third of the public believe they should be postponed again, according to a poll by Kyodo News. Another third thought they should be cancelled outright. Alongside cost, three other big issues are at play: athlete safety, spectators, and sponsorship.
We have to get together 11,000 athletes from 206 National Olympic Committees and the IOC Refugee Olympic Team in one place, not only for doing sport and showing sporting excellence, but also living together in an Olympic village, celebrating humanity together.
But expert after expert has questioned how this will be achieved without a vaccine.
Japan might be able to control this disease by next summer, and I wish we could. But I don't think that would happen everywhere on Earth. In this regard, I'm very pessimistic about holding Olympic Games in next summer.
The same is true of the desire to have crowds fill the stands.
If we're still in a position that we have to social distance, well, you can't necessarily have things like the Olympic Village or the participation of people probably in any fashion.
The loss of ticket revenue would be a major blow, and sponsors would likely follow. The challenges facing Olympics organisers are unprecedented, but they'll need answers for athletes, fans, and sponsors soon.
Thanks, Megan. That's Reuters reporter Megan Ravel.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Now let's go to Orlando, Florida, where 22 National Basketball Association teams have been practicing for the past couple of weeks, getting ready for the restart of the season on July 30th. The players are living and playing in a quarantine bubble designed to shield them from Florida's surge in coronavirus cases. According to the USA's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Florida is a hotbed for COVID-19 with more than 365,000 cases. The NBA games will all be played at one campus, the Disney ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex in Orlando. I guess you can say the Orlando Magic are the unofficial home team for this newly restructured NBA season. Orlando's head coach, Steve Clifford, talks about their protected environment.
It's not going to be normalcy, you know, I mean, it's very structured, and rightfully so. I would say this, it's a safe an environment in terms of, you know, the pandemic is, I would think any place is. I mean, we're getting tested every day. There are very strict guidelines before you can even leave your room every morning. There is structure in every phase of what we're doing. So,
Coach Clifford mentioned strict guidelines in Orlando. The NBA has published 113 pages of strict health and safety protocols. The players are back on the court for the first time in 4 months, longer than a regular NBA offseason. Orlando forward Aaron Gordon says it was not an easy transition to the quarantine bubble.
I'm going to be honest with you guys. It was extremely hard to get motivated. Extremely hard, especially with all the circumstances going on in America. All the different injustice, the pandemic, the health crisis.
Meanwhile, Aaron Gordon's teammate, 2019 All-Star Nikola Vucevic, says he's enjoying playing again.
It was great to be back. I was actually really excited to, you know, be back with the guys, just, you know, always being on the court. We didn't do any contact today. It was, you know, just kind of a lot of, you know, running through our offense, a lot of shooting, just kind of getting up and down the court, but all with no contact, just so we get a feel for it a little bit. But it felt great to be back, you know, just, you know, having that team together, having that feel of practicing again all together was great.
Depending on how their teams perform, this could mark the beginning of a grueling 3-month stay for some players in Orlando, where they will be separated from friends and family. The NBA Finals are scheduled to start September 30th and could run as late as October 13th. And thanks to NBA Entertainment for that audio from Orlando. Let's take a break now for this public service announcement from the Senegalese Center for the Boston Celtics.
Hi, everyone. It's Taco Fall. I just wanted to say that now's the time to practice kindness and empathy towards everyone around you. We're all doing our best to get through this together, so make sure you do your part. Grab a book, read it to your nieces and nephews on video chat, make a donation of canned goods to your local food bank, or even add some items to your shopping cart for your elderly neighbors. But most importantly, don't forget to just pick up the phone and call somebody and check in. That may mean a lot. You never know. We all can be next to each other right now, but we still can show how much we care about one another. So visit NBAtogether.com and join us in inspiring acts of caring.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. 10-time NBA All-Star and 3-time Olympic champion Carmelo Anthony is also in Orlando getting ready for the restart of the season. The 36-year-old Anthony has a leaner look in Florida. VOA's Jim Stevenson has that story and more in his latest Game Room Sports Package.
It's my first time in a bubble.
It's time for Skinny Melo, the latest incarnation of National Basketball Association veteran Carmelo Anthony. Anthony has noticeably slimmed down from what he looked like during the regular season.
I can definitely tell a difference. For me, it was just more about kind of just locking in. And we had so much time off that we didn't know what was going on. So, you know, for me, I had opportunity to kind of play with some things and play with my, you know, play with my diet and play with my workouts and train. Again, we didn't know what was going to be the outcome of us coming back and when we was coming back. But after we stopped in March, I just kept it going. I kept going, kept working, stayed on my diet.
What did he eat?
I can't give you that secret, but it was a very intense diet, healthy diet. You know, I had a holistic, you know, plan going over these past couple months. So those things was very integral into what you guys are seeing right now.
Maybe not for many of us, but the Portland Trailblazers star is finding it easy to stick to his diet.
Once it becomes your lifestyle, it's easy, right? It's second nature. You know it. You know what you should be eating. You know what you shouldn't be eating. You just carrying on that kind of that flow and that plan.
The weight loss was sparked by an anticipated change from the power forward position Carmelo Anthony adjusted to while playing in Oklahoma City to small forward upon the return of Zach Collins in Portland.
I haven't seen 230, 235 since, you know, early in my career. So now it puts me back in the mindset of that from a confidence standpoint, knowing that I was able to get back to that. On the court, I feel good. Again, I feel healthy. I have a lot of clarity now, too. So all of that was part of the plan.
Women's tennis hit the court in Berlin with an exhibition match in an airplane hangar and a limited number of fans on hand. Latvia's Anastasia Sevastova bounced back to upset Czech Republic's Petra Kvitova 3-6, 6-3, 10-5 in the final. Sevastova, ranked 43 in the world, says she's comfortable playing again.
I think all the hygienes and all the protocols were great. I mean, we felt safe. Everything was safe environment. And I think, yeah, for sure, it's WTA will have the same protocols, more or less.
Sevastova says it's time to be back on the court.
Yeah, we have to start at some point and start playing tennis. I mean, all other sports are going somehow, and it's like the end of the light in the end of the tunnel for us to start playing.
German Andrea Petkovic defeated Alina Svitolina of Ukraine in straight sets 6-4, 7-6 to place third. While athletes are happy to be back playing, experts and officials are still sounding caution.
If we're interested in global sport, we've got to be interested in the global eradication of this virus.
University of St. Andrews Professor Stephen Riker, a leading psychology professor who advises the Scottish government on their COVID-19 response, says fans should wait longer so they can truly enjoy the sports experience in the stands.
To go back to sport as we love it, right, where we can and scream and shout and hug people when we score goals, then for the sake of a relatively short period of time, to rush at it too early and to play in these sort of quite eerie half realities of, you know, half empty stadia where you can't hug people and you've got to be careful about shouting. As I say, I think it's worth waiting just a little bit longer, because I think actually what that will mean is we can get back to the normal that we love and we cherish all the faster.
Riker is worried about backsliding.
The danger is that if we reopen too early, we waste all the sacrifices that were made, right? Including hugely in sports, but also the personal sacrifices that every sports fan made. We will waste that if we reopen things too early, right? We've got to remember, we are still in the midst of a deadly pandemic, right? At a global level, we're probably in the early stages of that pandemic.
He outlined several concerns that fans may not have considered.
As long as it's not overcrowded, as long as you're not in a position where you are actually touching, then outdoor sports is, relatively speaking, not a major problem. The great problem is everything that surrounds it. It's getting to your seats, it's getting to the stadium, it's congregating outside, it's going to the bars, it's being in the public transport. That's where the issues are.
Riker says a country's COVID-19 infection level needs to be around one new case per million inhabitants per day in order to consider allowing fans back into stadia. He says an efficient test and trace system is also a prerequisite.
Transmission is more likely if people shout and scream and chant. And obviously that's part of many games, and that can be a factor. I remember back after the World Cup, people found that the vuvuzelas were very dangerous because they're a perfect way of spraying all sorts of things over people. So again, one needs to be careful about things like that. And of course, there are various norms of sports which are problematic, like, for instance, leaping up and hugging people, including strangers, if you score a goal or if you win or whatever. So there are a series of issues that need to be attended to quite carefully.
He says it's the teams and athletes who will have to remind fans of new habits and behaviors as they begin to return to events.
We need to work quite hard on reconfiguring our social norms, our normal ways of doing things, in order to make sure that people behave in safe ways when they go to games. And I think in doing that, we need to recruit the clubs themselves. You know, we need very clear statements from the clubs and very clear statements from the players as well.
There are plans to host limited amounts of spectators at major events, such as the French Open and English Premier League from September, while some fans have already been readmitted to Japanese baseball games, as well as top-flight football matches in that country and Denmark.
Stand up!
Sports fans have a lot to hear each day on VOA. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports for the latest from Africa, the United States, and around the world.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro.
Find the Sunny Side of Sports on the radio, online, and as a podcast.
This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
I get it.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music.
Wake up, dance this music.
Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. That's Heather Maxwell, our Music Time in Africa host. And thanks also to Jim Stevenson, who gave us that sporty game room package before Heather. Jim's game room opens with new stories each week, or you can play anytime via voanews.com. As we mark the one-year countdown to the Tokyo Olympics, some infectious disease experts say the game's organizers should remain flexible if a coronavirus vaccine is not found. Joining us with more details is VOA's Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Vaccines normally take years, if not decades, to develop. But scientists are attempting to create a coronavirus vaccine in a matter of months. Health experts are hoping a vaccine will become available by the middle of next year. But they admit the latter part of the year is a more likely scenario. And with the Tokyo Games now rescheduled for July of 2021, Olympic organizers are being advised to remain flexible. Zach Binney is a sports epidemiologist at Emory University in the United States. In a recent interview with Reuters News, he advised it would be wise to wait until a vaccine is developed before packing stadiums.
Two people is more dangerous than one, 10 is more dangerous than two, 100 is more dangerous than 10. So it's all along a continuum, but once you get up to 50,000, 70,000, 100,000 for something like college football here in the United States in some stadiums, that's an enormous amount of risk to be taking on. without a vaccine.
And Benny says the Olympic Games pose a unique risk due to the influx of visitors from areas with high rates of infection.
Even next year, we're still probably going to have some areas of the world where outbreaks are popping up and there's more transmission than others. So that does make it uniquely risky because that increases the chance that you are bringing somebody in from an area where the infection is rampant, and so they may be more likely to bring it in and spread it around the Olympics. And the other element of risk is that everybody's going home once the Olympics are over, all over the globe.
Jason Kindrichuk is an infectious diseases expert at the University of Manitoba in Canada. He told Reuters he's optimistic that a vaccine will be developed in time for next year's games, but worries it might not be early enough to see if it actually works.
You not only do you have to get everybody vaccinated, but you also have to make sure that the vaccine is taken and that they have decent immune responses. So, you know, I think and you want to get people vaccinated, not right at the point of the Olympics, but a little bit beforehand so they build up that protective immunity. You know, so I think all these things need to be weighed, and, you know, it may lead to some postponement or delay or further delay. But again, I think we have to get through at least probably the next couple of months to really understand whether or not the virus starts to have some resurgence in areas that lift up physical distancing measures. To see how susceptible we still are across the globe.
Dr. Kintaro Iwata is an infectious disease specialist at Kobe University in Japan. Last February, he criticized the Japanese government for the way it handled a coronavirus outbreak inside a cruise ship stationed near Tokyo. He tells Reuters he now questions the country's ability to control the virus leading up to next year's games.
Japan might be able to control this disease by next summer, and I wish we could, but I don't think that would happen everywhere on Earth. In this regard, I'm very pessimistic about holding Olympic Games in next summer, unless you hold Olympic Games in a totally different structures, such as no audience or very limited participations or such and such.
As health experts continue to debate whether the coronavirus outbreak will further delay the Olympic Games, Dr. Brian McCloskey says the argument itself is premature.
You know, we've got 15 months more of planning and preparing for the Olympics in 2021. We've got 15 months to see how the outbreak evolves. So I think it's premature to say it's unrealistic. Clearly, having a vaccine would be extremely helpful, not just for the Olympics, but for all of us. But even without a vaccine, I think there are other mitigation measures we will look at to make sure we can run the game safely. So it's a challenge, but I'd say it's too soon to say it can't happen.
Dr. McCloskey is an expert on global health security and outbreak prevention. And he tells Reuters this is not the first time the Olympics have been staged during a health crisis.
We need to remember, you know, that previously we've run the Rio Olympics during a public health emergency for Zika. We ran the Vancouver Winter Olympics during the pandemic flu public health emergency. You know, so we have experience where this can be done. This year for Tokyo, it got to the point where the amount of mitigation that would have been needed was more than we could ask the Japanese government to do when the Japanese government needed to be focusing on looking after its population. But that could well have changed by next year. So it's quite possible that the outbreak will be at a level where it's manageable without any particular risk. Or it may be that the vaccine arrives, it may be there's treatment available. So we just need to think through the options and not jump to too many conclusions too quickly.
As sports leagues and federations around the world continue to discuss how to resume the season during the pandemic, Tokyo organizers and the IOC are focused on delivering next year's games. The Olympics have been canceled on only three other occasions because of war. And that is all from me for now. Sunny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the July 23rd edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.